Well, good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. This is Vox Pop on WAMC. Joining us on this Thursday, August 30th edition, it's a gardening show, and we have Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. Want to know how to get the most out of your yard and garden as summer winds down? This is the time to call. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Now, if you've heard it before, you know the gardening show is a popular one. So best to get your call in early. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Gardening today on the show right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's the gardening show today, and we have the terrific trio to answer your questions. Bob Graves, co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia, director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. They're all here. They're in the studio, and they're ready to answer your questions. The number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll try to get to as many emails as we can. Bob, Fred, Greg, welcome back.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
Yeah, thanks.
Oh, and now the end is near. The summer is going away now.
No, we have another month.
Didn't seem like it yesterday.
No, it didn't. But you have to start making preparations now, right?
I think you start changing what you're doing a little bit.
Yeah. It's a great time to consider, and you don't have to do it until it cools off a little bit, consider transplanting and moving, especially herbaceous perennials. You know, those peonies get moved around, those iris, especially any of those sort of heavily rooted things.
Yeah.
But almost any of them, you can take them up, do the garden, renovate, and replant. It's a great time for that.
Coming up on a time to transplant trees and shrubs too. Basically, the rule of thumb we always mention is if it has leaves, don't move it when it has leaves on it. Move it when it has leaves off it, either early in the spring or in the fall.
But not in the dead of winter. You don't want to do
not
that.
The ground's frozen.
No, the ground's got to be workable.
But you can do it if it's not frozen.
That's right. Even like end of October, even November and stuff, and we've moved stuff.
A lot of times the ground doesn't freeze around here till January.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. Fred, I was thinking of you today on the wire. There was a piece about this nasty fungus that is affecting oak trees.
Well, it's probably oak wilt.
That's it.
Yes. That is a bad one. Oak wilt is not something that's brand new to the United States. In fact, it's been around since the 70s. It is, over the last 10 years, newer to the Capital region of New York. And it is probably the biggest problem for oak trees that we could really have around here. It's not to be confused with sudden oak death, which is another fungus that's wiping out a lot of the oaks out in California and stuff. But it's bad.
It's not pretty. I saw some pictures.
No, and there's no real cure for it. Once the tree gets oak wilt, it's a takedown.
So cut it down. Yeah.
You really want to try to prevent it. One of the ways that you can prevent oak wilt is one of the cultural practices that we always say right now is do not prune oak trees until it's dormant, middle of winter. So end of November would be the earliest that I would begin to prune oak trees, and right on through December, January, fine. The pathogen that causes oak wilt, which is fungal spores, looks for the actual wound.
Oh.
So even dead branches nowadays, and I used to say dead branches can be removed any time of year, but on oaks, I would even emphasize maybe not taking dead wood out until it's dormant as well. The branch is dead either way, but you don't want to see a fresh wound. The fungus is looking for those kinds of places to infect.
Is it affecting a particular geographic area first, or is it?
Well, I know it's in the capital. It has been in the capital region now for probably
a few years.
It might be as much as 8 to 10 years now. It's time's flying by.
But, boy, it sure is.
It may not be quite that long, but it's close to.
It is now time to take some calls. The lines are loaded up here. We have Bob, Fred, and Greg ready to answer your gardening questions, and we'll go to line three has been on longest. Tom in Hudson. Tom, you're there.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
My question is about picking tomatoes early before they ripen. Not while they're green, but while they're not fully ripe, maybe halfway or whatever. you know, I've had a problem, it's not as bad, but with the squirrels, and then now with all the rain, they split, and some of them get so heavy they kind of fall. So at one point, is a tomato ripened or you know, well on its way to be ripened without having to be on the vine? Or does that matter after a certain point?
It you know, you can even get completely green ones to ripen. If they're showing a little color, that sort of is the clue that you could probably pick that. And then just put them in a cool, dry place or even a warm, dry place. You can wrap them with a little newspaper that sort of holds in this gas that they're releasing, ethylene, that sort of helps speed up the ripening.
Yeah, don't put them in the refrigerator.
Don't keep them cold.
The first blush. But yeah. I picked them when the tomatoes were first coming out. The squirrels were really getting them. But I've noticed even at the first, even if you pick them green or first blush, they're not the same. At some point, it seems that the tomato tastes better if it's been left to ripen a little bit.
I mean, when it's ripened on the vine, it's going to taste a little better.
But it's always going
to
be better.
Farmers
that way.
Will, you know, when it looks like a frost, they're going to go through and pick everything that's green just to
save
the crop.
Yeah. Yep.
You can shortcut the ripening too by when you do put them in your either newspaper or brown paper bag, your tomatoes, put a banana in there with them.
Mm.
And, right.
The banana actually releases a lot of the ethylene, which is what the tomato needs to ripen, and you'll expedite that very rapidly using that.
All right, Tom, technique. Thank you very much for the call. We have Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves here to answer your questions on this gardening edition of Vox Pop. We go over to Linda in Troy. Hello, Linda.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have you can hear me all right?
Sure. Yes.
Let me check the speakerphone.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I have a dwarf Alberta peach tree. This is the third year that I've had it, and it's got so much fruit on it. But the problem is that the branches were so heavy that they've broken. I've got them propped up with garbage cans, and I'm just trying to figure out how and when to prune it. And, you know, because I don't want to, I mean, I'm essentially going to be topping it off, and it's just so bad for the plant and distasteful, and I really need some advice.
Okay.
So the branches are cracked?
Yeah.
From the main trunk or from a secondary branch?
From the secondary. There's the main trunk, and then there's a V. Yep. And off of the V, I had two branches per side.
So it's away from the main trunk a little bit.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, and they've all the one is split almost to the main trunk, unfortunately. Oh.
Wow. So obviously the wood is still alive. That you've supported the split enough that the fruit is still ripening, the leaves are still on there. And you could consider, picking the fruit, getting the fruit off of there, and not pruning back to that split, but, you know, using some, a little electrical tape works pretty well around that area to hold it back together so that it can callus and then prune normally in the spring. But otherwise, I think we're all going to say that you're going to have to remove those break areas so that you can start over.
Yeah, the pruning on a fruit tree is more of an engineering problem than it is. You don't care if it's pretty. What you're trying to do is get branches that can support the weight. So you got to take a lot of the little stuff off so it's not producing all that fruit that's going to weigh it down. And that's what orchards do in that late winter time, is to prune off a lot of little stuff.
Yeah, I mean, last year I only had 5 peaches, so I was so excited this year, and I've had so many, but, you know, obviously it broke the tree.
Yeah, and you can, you know, when you see that happening, you can start to take that fruit off early, too. You see all that fruit when it's little, just start taking it off.
Or make some, some forked propping sticks.
That's what I was going to suggest, the forked propping sticks. A lot of times orchards use them, too. They're sometimes called spreader sticks because they'll use them to spread branches down as well. But they do, you know, basically you're taking any small tree that you can cut, and it has a fork, and you're going to use those to prop them up. And you can get by through the season, especially if you do it. It's preventative, so you want to try to do it before they break. If you see them breaking, putting those in would certainly help to prevent the continued breaking of them.
Just a little more specific than the garbage cans.
Yeah. It'd be a little bit better for holding those angles.
Yeah. See, and I got it from Stark Brothers. I ordered it online, and they told me not to prune it until after the leaves had fallen off. They said it would go into shock and possibly die. Is that true? That I should wait until the leaves all come off?
Fred's shaking his head.
No, I mean, you theoretically could prune a peach tree right in the middle of summer, and that would be no issue for the tree whatsoever. Now, you would be losing fruit. So most times orchards don't prune fruit trees in the middle of summer, but even apple growers will prune in the middle of summer when they're training young trees. And there's a difference between training a young tree and getting fruit on an existing older tree that has good structure. So in the beginning stages of life, like with children or whatever, you're trying to promote really good structure. Hmm. And then as they get older, now that good structure is in place, and they can take the weight of the fruit.
So you're saying I should prop my children up with garbage cans?
Or forks.
Or forks.
Get good structure started early.
Yeah, your sticks work really well. Yeah.
All right. It saves us a lot of work in the long run.
All right, let's leave this alone. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's the gardening show, and wow, what a popular show. The lines are fully loaded. When you hear somebody hang up, that would be your chance to call, and it's 800-348-2551. All right, gentlemen, Fred, Bob, Greg, let's do a lightning round here with the stack of emails we have and see how many we can get through in a short period of time. This one's from Ruth. I would like to start a sassafras tree from seed. I would like to harvest in the wild. Is that possible?
Seed? Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. If the woman wants some seed, I have it at the Arboretum. She can come get it for free.
Okay.
So it is from a wild collected source, too, our sassafras.
All right, this one is from Chuck in Clifton Park. Help! The last 5 watermelons I purchased at market all had an ugly white core that we did not eat and discarded. We ate a bit of the outside, and it was fine and sweet. What is it? So many had it. Why?
Sounds like it's just not ripened properly.
Yeah, seed, just probably improperly, seedless watermelons has a weird center.
And then I was going to say picked a little early like we had talked about with the tomatoes and then never really ripens the right way and you get partial ripening on the outside and a nasty core center.
Well, Chuck's follow-up goes along with that. How do you pick a great melon? He says nearly impossible.
Part of the battle, I think, is the fact that a lot of times these people are picking them when they're not really ripe. So if you go to a farm stand, you're going to probably get a pretty good melon.
Okay.
If you go to a regular supermarket,
looking at
where did those melons come from? How long were they shipped? Yeah. So they pick them. And
right
then,
now,
you know,
there's a
little
of
more hit and miss.
Good local melons starting to happen.
Yeah. But absolutely, farm stands now, it'd be hard to go wrong.
Okay. All right. This one is from Fred. Please comment on the die-off of Lindera benzoin. I don't know what that is.
Lindera
spice bush.
Benzoin. Yep.
In the Greater Barrington area.
I'm not noticing a lot of die-off on spice bush.
So there is a wilt that occurs. Yep. I actually don't have a lot of information off the top of my head on it. I don't think I can say much more than that. I believe in some cases that plant recovers. It's the limbs die back.
Is it a vascular wilt type of thing? Fungal?
Yep. It's the stems. The entire stem is finished, and you prune it out. I have seen entire plants go. I have seen areas where it's perfectly fine, but I don't, I don't have any more information than that at the time. If they want to email,
what is your email address, Greg?
So it's wards@wardsnursery.com.
Okay, fair enough. This one's from Jocelyn. Hi there, Jocelyn writes. Any advice on how far to trim back lavender and when to do so?
Yeah, I got a great one. So lavender right now has sort of done everything it's supposed to do. It's sort of leggy. It's finished blooming. It's very woody. And what you would like to do, and this is actually it's a great question. It's perfect timing. Is bring it back to create this sort of central crown or little rosette at the base. So taking all of that wood back, allowing all the new growth to start from the center again as we go into September, so that when we go into winter, everything is at the lowest point on the plant.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. This one's from Barb in Saratoga. Another peach question. We have two peach trees in our yard, which yielded a small crop last year. They're about 4 years old. This year, we saw evidence of many peaches coming, but when we were away in late July for 2 weeks, something happened, and we returned to two or three peaches left on the trees. There's no evidence that the trees lost their peaches during the windstorms, as we didn't see any rotting fruit on the ground. What might have happened?
Yeah, my squirrels. Guess is some critter, squirrels probably a
first.
Squirrel.
Squirrels.
Yeah. Chipmunks, possibly.
Chipmunks, yep. Maybe.
If it's any consolation, Barb, they got all of our corn when we went.
Oh,
all
no.
All of it. My wife did a spectacular job of growing corn. It was about 2 days away from getting the first ears when we went on vacation in late July. Came back 2 weeks later.
Vacation.
It was like they napalmed the entire thing. It was
they
ridiculous.
They literally were watching your yard.
Raccoons,
oh, they're bro. Gone.
No, deer.
It was deer.
Oh, it was the deer.
Deer.
That's
worse.
Deer. This one's from Mary Ellen, and these are things I probably will say incorrectly. Is it okay to use shredded rubber mulch around flowering plants such as clematis?
Personally, I don't. I personally don't like to use shredded rubber mulch. There's just potentially toxins in shredded rubber.
Yeah,
I think we're all with you with that one.
Yeah, you know, sometimes use it around playgrounds.
I think maybe playgrounds would be your. You know,
all right, so don't cut up the old tires on the Honda and.
A mulch is a good thing to use around clematis because yes. by putting the mulch on, you keep the soil cool. Yep. So a nice organic some kind mulch. Of bark mulch, etc., would be best.
And then the second question here, and then we'll get to the phone. So hang in there. Can a spirea bush be divided, and if so, when?
You wouldn't really want to say divided, I don't think, because it's not really quite like a perennial. But if you really wanted to, probably chop through that root system.
Those summer blooming ones are not impossible to divide.
Yep, it's,
you could do that.
You could.
All
it's,
right.
Not something that I would normally do. But if you were going to do it, I would probably do it dormant, though.
Okay.
That's what I was
so
just,
not at, well, at this particular time.
I was going to say you might want to wait a little
not
bit.
Now.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Here we go. Betsy in Schenectady. Betsy, you're on.
Hi. First, a comment about ripening tomatoes.
Yes.
Grab them by the roots and pull it up. Pull the whole thing up. Let them ripen on the vine. Bring them inside. You know, leave them on the vine. I've got great success with the texture that way.
What do you think, gentlemen?
I like that idea.
Yeah.
From now on, you're not going to get any more tomatoes on that plant, so you certainly could do
that. Can't you just cut the vine? Cut it at the base. You have to pull it up?
Well, she's saying roots because actually the plant could still start to give.
Oh.
It's, yeah, it still kind of feeds that, and you get a little bit more of a vine ripe out of it. So
all right.
Because it kind of applies to my question is, what zone do you think we really are now?
In Schenectady.
Because I typically, and where I live in Schenectady, am not getting a killing frost until November. Yeah. So when I know the killing frost is coming, that's when I go and I rip them up by the roots, put them in anything, boxes, I say, bring them inside. And so that's my question. When do you think, what do you think our zone is now?
I mean, it can be one zone on one. It can be one zone on one side of a building and a zone on the other side of the building. The microclimate makes a big difference.
Yeah, and it's just a reference. It's, you know, you even though we could be considered zone 5 and maybe a warm zone 5 these days, the next year that winter could be zone 4 again. It just depends on
really depend, and particularly in the Capital District, you can go from a zone 5 to a zone 3 in a matter of an hour's drive easily.
Yeah. Okay. There has been some updates though with the USDA hardiness zones across the board. So they did a general update a number of years ago, and I would say for the most part, most zones were about a half a zone warmer across the board. So over at the Arboretum, we were always like a 4B, and we were updated to a 5.
Okay.
Although, like Bob said, microclimates within one zone vary a lot. You go on top of the hill by the meeting house at the Arboretum, you're probably a zone 4 at the
elevation
best.
Makes a huge difference.
Down by the driveway by the farmhouse, easily a zone 5. But most are across the board, about a half a zone warmer on all the zones. And that's been put out by the USDA. A number of years ago.
Let's go to Diana in Gloversville. Hi, Diana, you're on.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Good.
Just a shout out to Landis Arboretum. It is a jewel in our area. If you have not been there, you need to go. It's a great, great place.
Great, thanks a lot.
Wonderful stuff out there. Well,
thanks a lot.
You're welcome. My question is about, and I think you answered it, transplanting a hydrangea. I cut it down every winter to about 3 foot. It grows to over 8 foot every summer. It's taller than my house, which is really bizarre. And I need to move it because it's crowding out other things. So I should wait till the leaves are all gone. And so spring, I should transplant it.
If you can wait till spring, that is probably the absolute best time. But as we were saying before, you could do it in October, you know, late October, November, if we're waiting that long this year for the leaves to fall.
Okay, and do they do better up against a house rather than in an open, like on an open lawn?
Depends on the type of hydrangea, yes. Really.
And if it's growing 8 feet, okay, I'm assuming panicle hydrangea.
Yeah.
And I think they could grow anywhere.
This is the one with the cone-shaped flowers, yeah. The big white.
That would like to be out in the full sun if you got it.
Yeah. Full sun.
It wants full sun, ideally. Part sun, part shade, it could live, but it likes more sun, the better.
So in other words, if she puts it out in full sun, it'll grow to, you know, 27 feet? I mean, how big do you need the hydrangea to be?
Well, there is a maximum size of most of these things.
That said, you know what it's going to do. And so if you want it by your house and you're getting, you know, some reasonable light for 4 hours, half a day or so, that will work.
That would work, too.
Just keep whacking it. That's all.
All right, Diana, thanks for the call. And our number is 800-348-2551. Nikki in Saugerties. Nikki, you're on.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
All right.
Question about invasives. There is a kind of inaccessible small area at my house, about 4 feet long by about maybe 3 feet wide. It's wedged between an old stone porch, the entrance to the basement, the wall of the house, and a tree blocking it in front. And I looked in there lately, and lo and behold, there is something that looks like a monstrous tropical thing, and I have a suspicion that it's one of these Japanese knotweed things. Because it's got big leaves, it's got some little spikes going up that haven't flowered yet, but the leaves are
pretty
really
soon,
big,
yeah.
and the stem in the fattest place is like 2 inches around, and it's got kind of, I don't want to say thorns, but it's kind of toothy.
The other parts that you were describing sounded a lot like it with the big fat leaves. The Japanese knotweed is going to have like a bamboo like stem, and not thorns.
Not thorns. It's just kind of it's prickly, hairy, and it's kind of yellowish.
Does it look like bamboo to you? Like a bamboo?
That hadn't occurred to me. I had another question about that awful little bamboo stuff that's an invasive thing everywhere.
How tall is it growing?
It's not a matter of tall. It's reaching. Let me just go out here and take a look.
Creeping
it's
around on the ground a bit?
It's reaching towards more light, but it's got, hang on. It's really kind of menacing looking. I tried to pull on it, and it's, no, maybe not Japanese knotweed. It's the leaves are toothy.
So
the leaves are,
so
what
I think
do you want
could,
to call it?
We can definitely solve it with a photo if you want to send a photo.
Yeah, I don't have any of those machineries, I'm afraid.
Good for you.
But what I want to say is that
the end result, the answer may be the same regardless of what it is at this point.
Okay, the question is, it's really kind of now taking over and taking up this place, and it's in a place where water comes from one side, hits up against the basement wall, and then flows down into these things in the basement. So it's a place that's getting lots of water because we've had all kinds of rain. So when I pulled on it, in the place that I can get at it, it doesn't budge. Mm-hmm.
Cutting all the stems, and as I think we often say, is just and then as soon as you see some new growth, get in there and cut again. So and it probably will happen in a couple more weeks because it's still warm.
Pretty easy in a limited area like that. Just keep out there and keep cutting it and cutting
and
it and cutting
it. Yeah, come
it's easier said than done. You'd have to see the area.
Yeah. Okay.
But what I want to say is that if I have something that I suspect may be an invasive, whether it's that or, you know, this little tiny, with this bamboo-looking leaf that is just like carpeting the sides of the roads and things like this. It doesn't get very tall. It's just a small thing, but it looks exactly like a bamboo-type leaf. That's an invasive, too, I've been told. What I want to know is when you find something like that that you suspect is an invasive or you don't know, I mean, what we do around here is generally, you know, my landlady says just throw it into the woods, but should I just instead, like, leave it out and expose it until it dries out completely and then throw it into the woods?
Yeah, that would be fine. As long as it's dry and completely dead, then you shouldn't have to worry about it.
And if it has seed pods, though, if it does have seeds, then that would be a reason to not do that. So if it was an invasive and it had already gone to seed and those seeds were starting to dry, now you're throwing it out and letting it dry, those seeds are going to be viable.
So what do you do?
So with something like that, if it was the seeds, I think I would bag it and throw it out.
Okay.
If I was worried about that particular part of it.
All right, Nikki, thanks for that call. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. And Kimberly in Wendell, Mass. Is on. Kimberly.
Oh, hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. My garden is pretty massive, and I have three kids, so I don't have a ton of time to deal with it, but it's done a good job. I've been fighting porcupines, but I just found something new to fight, and it's a little aggravating. I planted new lavender, and I saw that one looked dead. I picked it up, and the roots had been taken down. And then I found a little tunnel.
Yep.
So I'm assuming it's a mole or a vole.
It's a vole with
and
a V.
Now, yep. Oh, with a V.
Yeah, it's
so
the
now
vole.
It's eating more. Yeah, and it's eating my carrots. It's kind of eating everything.
Yep.
So I'm afraid that it's going to go crazy in there over the next few years if I don't do something about it.
Yeah, moles are actually, they predominantly feed on grubs, and they don't actually eat roots of plants. So those guys, in my opinion, are for the, unless you're a turf grass person, you pretty much, a lot of times call the mole your friend. But the vole, on the other hand, that's a gardener's worst nightmare.
Animals in a garden.
It really can be bad in the garden because these guys eat roots and they eat all kinds of plants and they girdle all kinds of trees and shrubs as well. One way to get rid of them is just a mouse trap.
Yeah.
And if you are going to use a mousetrap,
okay,
I recommend cutting like an old plant container maybe in half so that you can kind of put that over top of that mousetrap so other things like birds don't.
Little children.
And place
birds.
That right next to the hole.
Right next to the hole.
So that they come out of the hole and the first thing they see would be the bait.
And like peanut butter. With, the classic.
Down pot or trash can or cut-off pot, something so that nobody else can get it.
Right, and no other critters as well.
And you'll catch a lot of them.
You will. And
there's not just one.
Oh.
And it's not just one.
How many you think?
Depends on whether you're talking about today or next week.
Right. They multiply rapidly, but guarantee if you see one, there's probably at least a dozen.
All right. Well, good luck, Kimberly.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot for the call. Over to Steve in Schenectady. Steve.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hi, Steve.
So I've got a couple questions. We moved into a new house. It's very shady and very wooded, which is lovely, but it's also great habitat for mosquitoes and ticks and whatnot, and also tough to plant. So I'm looking for some advice on planting that we can do in shady or partial sun areas that can also maybe double to help deter ticks and mosquitoes and whatnot.
That's interesting. So, normally when people are looking for shade plants from us, it's really about nothing else is growing well. It's sort of barren, that there's large trees that are sort of creating a drier effect, so your lawn isn't doing well. So we're suggesting things like ferns. There's a lot of different both native and non-native, but non-invasive ferns that will work really well. There are the things that are blooming now in this sort of herbaceous group are Japanese anemones are doing really well. The snake root or semisifuga, which is a kind of a fun native plant.
So you always have hosta, of course.
Hosta. All of these sort of fun herbaceous things that you can create little mass plantings, little ground cover-like areas with.
There's probably a greater variety of herbaceous perennials than there is of shrubs, although there are some shrubs that will work, but probably not more than a handful.
Yeah, and the other thing to think about, too, is that there's lots of different levels of shade. Mm-hmm. There's shade where you have filtered light. And then there's like really deep shade. And shade with filtered light actually lets you be able to put an arsenal of different material in the ground there. Dense, dark shade is a little bit harder. but filtered light, and I don't know if you have that or not, but if you do, there's a lot more other things, even though you think, oh, I got a lot of shade here, you might be getting a lot more light down on the ground than you realize. Mm. So
I think we are, because there's definitely weeds and things that are growing in some of these beds.
Okay.
So there is light.
If you got anything growing, you got some light.
Opens us up. Yeah.
Exactly, in which case you probably have a lot more options. You don't always have to go with the whole, you know, the classic, you know, dense shade plants. Now you can get away with things with filtered lights and a lot of things like filtered light. And then you also could possibly limb up some of the trees, making sure, of course, you're doing it the correct way with the right cuts or having a professional do it for you. But limbing up some of the lower branches or lifting the canopy, they call it crown raising, that also lets a lot more light and air get through your yard. You know, but you do want to make, you know, sure that you're doing it right before you do it. You can't glue the branches back on once they're off. So,
but about the ticks and mosquitoes, ticks are, you know, probably going to be best eliminated by sort of opening up some areas. So lawn or very short areas or gravelly or mulched areas are certainly going to inhibit ticks.
Yeah, they like brushy stuff, ticks, too.
Exactly. So and that kind of weedy spot, you know, if you're walking through tall sort of weedy areas, those are going to be the places.
They don't like the mowed, manicured stuff nearly as much.
Same with mosquitoes. They're sort of, they you know, mosquitoes are breeding in water, standing water that doesn't have any predators to feed on those. And then the adults will just hang out in the shade of some shrub or tree. Yep. So opening up the area will, you know, raising the canopy
a little
reduce
bit.
Those.
Plus, it'll also let some wind through, and that'll also help with mosquitoes as well.
All right, we'll take a break here. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC, The Garden Show, and Ray Graff here with Bob, Fred, and Greg answering your questions today. And Fred Breglia, big doings over at the old Landis Arboretum, eh?
Yeah, it's you know, it's hard to believe we're talking fall plant sales here. This summer really did seem to go really by really quick. But we are talking fall sale, and that's actually coming up next weekend. That's going to be September 8th and 9th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. LandisArboretum.org.
All right.
All the info on the sale is on the website and on our Facebook page as well. You can find us there. Free admission, free parking, no purchases necessary, free tours on Saturday.
Oh, nice.
I'll be giving a tour along with Ed Miller, who's the curator of the Native Plant Trail, and he and I will be giving a tour of that trail. Again, no purchases necessary.
That's good.
10 to 4, Saturday, September 8th, and Sunday, September 9th.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And how about you, Greg Ward?
Well, we have a few free classes coming up. One is September 22nd on Saturday, 10 a.m., bulbs indoors and out. So as we get into September, fall bulbs are on people's minds, and you can do a lot of forcing of those in addition to planting them in the ground. And so we're going to discuss a little bit of that.
All right.
The Saturday the 13th, we have fall garden problem solving. It's a little bit like this show.
Yeah.
But you get to ask the questions in person.
You don't get cut off after 2 minutes.
Exactly.
That's pretty good too, yeah, I guess.
And that's right. So that was, I think, a Saturday, October 13th at 10. All this is on the website, wardsnursery.com. And then one more coming up that we've published October 20th, Houseplant 101.
Ah.
It's right about then that you go, boy, I have all these plants. I'm not sure whether I really, you know, have a place for them in my house or whether I should repot them, etc.
Right.
You can learn a little bit about
Outstanding.
That.
How about you, Bob Graves?
Yeah, at Fadigans.com, we've got our upcoming seminars listed. We've got one on bulbs on the 8th of September and one on hens and chicks and using hens and chicks planted in pumpkins
coming up in September.
Oh, interesting. Oh, yeah,
and
pumpkins,
then we've got another one on fall arrangements in September.
So okay.
Lots of stuff going on.
Very good. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. And Mike and Albany. Mike, you're on.
Hi, yes. I have an accolade cherry tree, which I got through the city's planting program, through Albany's planting program in the fall. It's a beautiful tree, and it has it bloomed as advertised, but I think it may be in distress. We got pink flowers in the spring, and then they turned to green leaves, and then the green leaves, especially in the lower levels, began to disappear. The upper levels, it has green leaves with tiny, tiny holes in them. I went to a local nursery, and they said, put organic insecticide on it, which I've done, but I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing. Any other approaches I might take?
Well, the first thing I would say is that, I like that tree, by the way. It's a great tree. It's a great ornamental. The biggest thing is this. There's sort of two thresholds where we have to do things or don't do things. There's an economic threshold where the actual damage of the on the plant is actually affecting the health of the plant. And then there's an aesthetic threshold where the damage on the plant actually isn't hurting the tree's health. It just makes it look not too great. So I at the Landis Arboretum, we really don't treat on aesthetic thresholds. We're not really too worried if things don't look exactly perfect in as part of nature. But we do treat things when things start to cross into that economic threshold where it could hurt the tree.
Where's Mike
so,
now?
So we don't know where Mike is, but one thing we can do is try to rule that down. Do you think that the leaves on your tree, for the most part, do you think there's still less than a quarter of the damage affecting about a quarter of the foliage or less?
I would say it's about a quarter. It's all the bottom branches. The upper branches still have leaves. In fact, the tree has grown, I'm guessing, about a foot since I got it. And it's a beautiful tree. I just don't know what to do about having lost all those leaves.
This is a new tree?
That have pinpricks in them.
Yeah. This is a new tree this year?
Yes, it is. They planted it in September.
Yeah, the dead the branches that that are lower, they don't have any leaves on them?
No.
I don't want to scratch them to see if they're green under the bark before you.
So my gut feeling is you probably have two things going on. One of them is the fact that the leaves are not on the lower part is not as concerning as if they were not on the upper part. The upper part of the tree would be much more alarming if there was no leaves up there. That means there's something quite dramatically wrong, probably in the vascular system or the roots. The fact that the upper part looks okay with some holes, I wouldn't worry too much about the holes because cherries, ornamentals like that, they always get little critters that'll feed on the leaves and make some holes. Doesn't sound like anything too bad. The dead leaves or the lack of leaves on those lower branches, like Bob said, you could scratch the branch, see if it's green. My gut feeling is it probably won't be green when you scratch it, in which case it's dead. That is probably a result of transplanting.
Yeah, just thinning itself, I would guess.
That's my guess, and I think you're going to be fine.
Result of what? I didn't
transplanting, result of transplanting.
Yeah, because it's a newly planted tree, and when you put newly planted trees in, the chance of not having some die back in some form or another, it's pretty slim. You usually have a few branches that'll go here or there.
Okay.
We would want to see those on the lower part of the tree, though, not the upper part, and that's what we're seeing. So my gut feeling is the tree will probably be fine, and the little holes on top I wouldn't be overly concerned about. But if you did want to send me a picture, you could, fred@landisarboretum.org. We could sort of talk about this in more detail if necessary. But
okay.
Otherwise, I think it'll be okay.
Yeah, that's it. If those branches are dry down below, if they're not green, you can start to prune them off.
You can prune those off.
And otherwise, it sounds like your tree's doing pretty well.
Okay.
And I think you'll be all set.
Good news. Let's go to Greg in Pine Bush. Greg, you're on.
Hi. My tomatoes have died for the last two seasons. I've always been growing tomatoes there in the same garden forever, but the last 2 years, they start to... once they're starting to get the actual tomatoes growing in on them, the leaves start to turn brown, then black, and then it just works its way up to the top and kills the whole thing off. Like right now, they're all completely dead.
So they grew to the normal height, and you got some tomatoes, and they ripened.
Yes. Yep. And then that's it. I only get like kind of the one round, and it's a small batch on each plant.
Yeah.
But it starts at the bottom, and I try to stay up with it and trim off all the dead leaves because I'm thinking maybe it's some kind of fungus, and if I get it soon enough, it doesn't make its way up. But sure enough, it always does.
It's called
the last 2 years.
It's called early blight. Early blight is the good one. Late blight is the bad one. I think I have that right. Anyway, and so that is something that you can look up and sort of review. But essentially, rotation of the crop. So planting your tomatoes far enough away from where you planted them last year that it's less likely or unlikely that any overwintering spores on the soil underneath where the last year's plants were would not make contact with the new area. Mulching under your tomatoes. This is a fun thing to do, but Usually you want the ground to warm up first. So sometime around mid-June, sort of adding some kind of straw or mulching material under the plants will sort of kind of keep that splash from happening with the soil, so less likely to get it. There are fungicides you can apply if you want to do that on a regular basis, and that is something you do.
There are some good organic fungicides, but the thing you have to remember with fungicides is they're preventatives. You put it on before you see a problem.
Yeah, once you see that on the tomato, there's no stopping it. Usually.
You know, good light, good consistent irrigation, good nutrient load in the soil will really make the plants grow aggressively enough to usually stay ahead of the disease at least until the end of the year, which is, you know, just about now. I mean, yes, tomatoes in September are great, but we're, especially if you planted them early, we're getting to the end here.
Yeah, and avoid overhead irrigation, too. Yeah. You should definitely be, you know, watering down at ground level to avoid the leaves staying really wet.
Well, I mean, in nature, irrigation comes from above.
It does.
Why then do we have to do something that's unnatural?
Well, you know, it's a good question. The answer to that, though, is that when you do irrigation, quote unquote, it's usually overdone. Usually it's applied more regularly than nature would provide.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, nature always, it's going to, you know, you don't know when it's going to get the rain, but it doesn't keep hitting it. But in an irrigation system, when they do overhead irrigation, it's every morning, every afternoon.
Yeah, so I see what you're saying.
In nature, there are not going to be a lot of tomatoes growing all by themselves either. You know,
no,
that's something that we've done is.
Oh, I see what you people. I see what you mean. Let's go to Renee in New Paltz. Renee, you're on.
Thank you. I have had the worst vegetable garden in it, which is relatively small, but something has eaten holes in many, in the lettuce, in the kale. So the plant just doesn't produce much. And I also listened to your early blight business, and I'm ready for next year, apparently, to prevent it by spraying before you see anything.
Do you have a fence around the garden?
But pardon me?
Do you have a fence around the garden?
I do.
Yeah, okay. And I'm just wondering about rabbits. You're talking about them eating things like that.
Rabbits.
No, I don't think so. I think, aren't there insects that do this?
Yeah, so if you have something eating holes in lettuce and in kale, it could be two different things. It could be the same thing. If it's the same thing, it's probably slugs.
That's what I was thinking, slugs.
And if it's,
I don't see slugs, though.
No, well,
you
never see slugs unless you're out there at night with a flashlight. They
come out at night, huh?
They come over, they feed, and by sunrise, they're back hiding under something, anything they can find, a little debris, a board, something.
Yeah, my gut feeling was slugs. That was the first thing I thought when she said kale and lettuce.
Kale can also be eaten by cabbage worms, which is a green caterpillar.
I don't see that either.
Which is they will be there, but they blend in. They look they're the same color as the leaf.
Hmm. Okay. Well, Renee, thanks a lot.
Just one fast question, would the increase in temperature have anything to do with this?
Increase in moisture for the slugs. They love this weather.
Right.
They love it.
Okay.
There's some good organic controls for that, too, that you can sprinkle around for the slugs.
Slug controls? What sort of things?
You could actually
iron phosphate, I think.
Iron phosphate. It's very effective and non-toxic.
You could also use like a frisbee turned upside down and literally bury that like at soil level, and then get some old cheap beer. You don't want to use your good stuff for this.
No.
Dump that in that frisbee.
This really works too,
and this really works well. The slugs will just go
works.
Right into that frisbee with old warm, nasty,
like beer.
Stale.
When I do it, I like to have a beer and give them a beer.
Yeah, but I always go with the pale ale personally, and I use the really cheap.
That's a good idea. And so what happens? The slugs end up just sitting around watching the game?
No,
for
they'll
a while,
they literally go in and drown in there.
No, I'll be darned.
And it's a really
why
effective.
Beer?
They just seem to really like
yeast.
Yeah, I guess it's the yeast.
Oh, okay. Let's go over to Barbara in Newburgh. Barbara.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a young peony. She's about 2 or 3 years old. She's a little on the spindly side, and I'd like to transplant her to a bed where I have some nice, big, healthy peonies. I've never transplanted a peony before, and I want to do it right.
Okay, well, it's perfect timing right now. Any time in the next couple of months, you could do it today because they're essentially done growing. There's a big brown tuber in there, maybe a small brown tuber. You could follow that skinny one or two stems down and find that. You lift that. You can look it over for any older tissue that's no longer viable and remove that if you have any of that. The spot you're going to put it in. Go ahead. The spot you're going to put it in, of course, you will have cultivated, made it into a nice garden soil situation. And then you're literally just going to sort of lay it back in there with no more than about 2 inches of soil over the top.
Yeah,
it's a
that's
very
really,
shallow planting.
Really important to plant it shallow because if it's too deep, it'll grow, but it won't flower.
That's right. Yeah, and a lot of times peonies get planted too deep.
Yeah.
So you're
going to feel like you're not doing it a fair.
Yeah, shallower is better. If you are ever going to divide that tuber, you want to be very much careful how you do that as well. There's a little basal kind of root plate on that tuber, and if you divide it, you want to make sure you get a little piece of that root plate on each of the divisions.
Okay.
Otherwise, it won't grow.
All right, Barbara, we'll have to move it along here, but thank you for the call, and let's go to Tom in Poughkeepsie. Tom, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question. I have what occurred to me as a very strange circumstance. In the late summer of 16, my beautiful, 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 God, it had to be over 50-year-old Japanese maple just decided to die. It had been beautifully healthy. This thing was huge. I mean, the trunk of it was close to 18 inches in diameter. It was right off the front foundation of the house that we've lived in for 40 years.
Wow.
It was one of the reasons we bought the house, because that was this beautiful Japanese maple that just sort of swept over our driveway. Anyway, it was always wonderfully healthy. It grew. It was all the way up to the height of our roof, like second story, big old Victorian. Really beautiful tree. And every year in the late summer, it would turn red, and then the leaves would come down in the fall, and, you know, through the winter, and then come back in the spring. Well, in the summer of 16, it never turned red in about this time of year, you know, end of August. It never turned red. The leaves just slowly started shriveling up, and as we progressed into fall, all the leaves just shriveled up, and they just stayed on the tree right through the winter.
Okay.
We
only have about 45 seconds for an answer. The question has been long.
I just want to know what killed the tree.
Okay.
My first guess, though there are some other choices, was that 2016 was a severe drought, and that there were several instances that I noticed where trees in general and shrubs did a similar thing, stressed to the point of death for the following year. So in some cases, you didn't know it until the following year.
Yeah, there's also potential for it's a vascular fungus, too, that it could have gotten in there in maples.
Well,
that's possible.
Now
okay, we're about out of time, Tom, but Fred, you want to add anything?
It also could be a lot of other environmental issues that have been building for quite some time, and then they hit, and a lot of times people don't know that they're there. They don't know it's coming until it's
could have been winter
late.
Damage from the year before that didn't show up till it
could have been
dry.
A number of different factors.
All right, we'll have to leave it there, gentlemen. Bob, how do people find out more about Fadigans?
www.fadigans.com.
Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
Yes, the same number of W's and wardsnursery.com.
And Fred Breglia, Landis Arboretum.
And it's landisarboretum.org.
Well, thank you all for being here. Thanks to everybody for listening and for the great calls. Support comes from Hadley Garden Center, Hadley, Massachusetts. Locally owned for over 50 years, offering annuals, perennials, nursery stock, organic fertilizer, and advice. HadleyGardenCenter.com. Wild Bird Junction Backyard Nature Shop, 308 Delaware Avenue, Delmar, offering wild bird seed, bird feeders, bird houses, bird baths, garden decor, chimes, binoculars, and garden and nature gifts, wildbirdjunction.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repairs, including tire pressure, exhaust, brakes, and check engine lights, full-service gas station, collegestreetmotors.com. And Albany's Palace Theater, presenting Michael Flatley's Lord of the Dance, Sunday, September 30th, fusing traditional Irish dance and music with a contemporary spin. Tickets at palacealbany.org. Thanks again to Greg, Fred, and Bob for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks to Dina Salzman for answering the phones, our engineer, Jordan Taylor, our producer, Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, Mother Mirick's Confectionery. Stand by for news.